They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back, Crossover NBA Podcast. On this episode, we have got a free agency primer with two of my favorite guests. Sam Amick does a great job covering the NBA with The Athletic. Billy King, the former general manager of the Nets and 76ers. We get into a little bit of everything, from the Bogdan Bogdanovic issue with Sacramento. How does that shake out? Houston, what do they do with James Harden and Russell Westbrook? And what exactly is the market for Russell Westbrook? Free agency, Fred VanVleet, Montrezl Harrell, some names out there. What do we expect to see in the coming days as the NBA has their accelerated free agency beginning on Friday? A little bit later on, Tony Parker, the former San Antonio Spurs guard. He has got a new book out that details his experiences growing up in France, playing for the San Antonio Spurs. I get into all that and a couple of good Greg Popovich, Tim Duncan stories thrown in. Terrific conversation with Tony Parker. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way to support it. Get over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Sam Amick and Billy King. All right, free agency is just hours away. A very abbreviated free agency with the start of training camp just around the corner as well. Talk about that. I want to bring in two of my favorite guys in this business. Billy King, the former general manager of the Nets and Philadelphia 76ers, and Sam Amick does a great job covering the NBA over at The Athletic. And Sam, I want to start with you because you broke the story on Wednesday that there was something going on with the Bogdan Bogdanovic deal. And that this is one of the weirder stories of the last couple of weeks. Bogdanovic seemed to be earmarked for Milwaukee in a sign-and-trade situation. Bucks were certainly excited about getting a player like that to add to their mix to, you know, sweeten the pot for Giannis. And now, as we sit here Thursday afternoon, I don't know what exactly is going on. Explain to me exactly what happened and what the future of this deal is.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Chris, you and I have been doing this a long time and long enough to have old stories with Billy here. And Billy, it's great to be with you, too. This is one of the most unique situations I've ever seen. And essentially, the elephant in the room is that free agency technically, formally doesn't begin until Friday. Bogdan is a restricted free agent. It's pretty challenging to stay within the rules and agree to terms on a sign and trade, you know, 5 days ahead of free agency. And so when this got reported by ESPN, immediately that, you know, that's alarm bells all over league offices, all around the league. And you know, if anybody doesn't connect these dots, you got to say right out the gate that, you know, it's not just about Bogdan Bogdanovic. Bogdan, along with Drew Holiday, was part of the kind of, you know, retain Giannis plan from the Bucks. And really that idea being that, hey, Giannis, look, we just upgraded the roster and you got that Supermax that's going to be coming your way in a few days. And it really seemed like, you know, these deals were going to set up him signing that contract. So now with it being in jeopardy, because Bogdan, you know, and his camp certainly want, like, very strongly asserts that there was never an agreement, that he never checked that box and said, yeah, I'll go to Milwaukee for, you know, these terms that you're not even allowed to talk about yet. So, I don't think it's going to happen. Never say never. I think that Bogdan is going to look at all of his options, certainly now in a very kind of on the up and up way. You know what I mean? He's going to be taking meetings, virtual, every kind of meeting. He's going to be looking at everything. And I'm curious to see what the Bucks do, because I think they are still holding out hope. And, you know, I think Giannis could possibly be involved in the recruitment. And I think Bogdan's situation is pretty fascinating.
Billy, what did you make of that? Because, look, you can't speak to guys under contract, but there are always ways to back channel communications there. I mean, what was your reaction to a deal that seemed to be done just falling apart the way it did?
Well, to me, it seems like a deal was done and they got word that, you know, the league is going to void the deal and, you know, penalties could be coming. And so the easiest way to say is, Bogdan didn't know about it. There was no deal. And, he didn't agree to a contract. And so now the league can't come in and say there's a deal now that somebody has proof. He does all his free agent, does all his visits, see what the market plays. And I think Milwaukee comes back and makes a deal and the sign and trade will happen. Not unless somebody puts an offer sheet out there that's big enough that Milwaukee will walk away. But I think at the end of the day, this is a way to, cover their butts a little bit. And, Milwaukee and Sacramento were talking about a possible trade, but nobody included Bogdanovich. And so now he can do his free agency. Then they can come back 6, 7, 8 days in and say, okay, we got a deal.
Sam, and
he might get more money out of the deal.
Yeah. Right. I mean, Sam, do you think there's a better offer out there for Bogdanovich? I mean, there are a few teams with cap space, Atlanta, Detroit, handful of others, but do you think there's a better situation for him out there?
I do. I just don't know if it's going to fit for him from a basketball standpoint also. Here's the thing, and I wish I had total clarity on this, but I think this matters a lot. My understanding of the timeline is this. These discussions that, like you said, Chris, you can back channel Bogdan, but these talks, were happening long before Drew Holiday was part of the equation. When the Holiday deal went down, there was a ripple effect not only on Bogdan's money, but on his role. And I can tell you, you guys know, I live near Sacramento and I go to more Kings games, just because of that. And I've been around Bogdan. This dude has an incredible amount of belief in his own game. He fought his way off the bench into the Kings starting role because he was just simply better and a better fit than Buddy Hield. And he does, he's got a lot of moxie and he doesn't want to be, I don't think, a fourth option. And once Holiday went to Milwaukee, I know it's a title contender. And you would think that that would be the number one priority. But that thing, I think, matters too, that you're going to go with Giannis, Middleton, Holiday, and then the ball is going to Bogdan. I'm not sure that has him as excited as he might have been before. And then, and again, disclaimer is the numbers might be a little bit off, but I think that he might have been looking at something around $18 million a year before the Holiday deal. And I think the way that the Bucks cap ends up falling after the Holiday deal is it possibly more in the range of 15, and his market that he was pursuing is 18-19. So, I don't know how all that comes out in the wash, but I think even without all the drama, the Bucks situation has some obstacles.
Billy, look at this from the Bucks perspective and take Bogdanovich out of the equation for now. Anyway, you get Drew Holiday and look, they gave up a lot, 3 first round draft picks. And I usually slap Bobby Marks around with this stuff, but you've given up a lot of draft picks too in your time as a general manager.
but nowadays it's in vogue to give up 3 and with swap rights, So I was ahead of the curve.
in your mind, is Drew Holiday worth that type of risk? Understanding that, look, as Sam said, it's Operation Retain Giannis. That's got to be factored into all this, but is Drew Holiday worth that type of haul to give up?
I think if that's what it takes to keep Giannis, yes. If Giannis is going to return because you have Drew Holiday, then yes, because any team would give up that to get Giannis. So basically they're giving up that to retain Giannis. Now from Giannis' point of view, you got to look, okay, now we get Drew Holiday. How are we going to keep getting better? Because we gave up a lot to get Drew Holiday. But if he said this is what it's going to take to get Drew, for me to stay and sign the Supermax, then yeah, because they couldn't afford to lose him because they would have set that franchise completely back. If he is not committed, then it's a big, big gamble. One that could set the franchise back tremendously because you can't replace him and you've given up all those picks. And, the one thing with the Brooklyn deal we did with Boston, the one thing that Sean walked into was cap space. He had the potential with flexibility cap space, and he had Brook Lopez, an asset to trade Thaddeus, and the other Bojan Bogdanovic. And so that's what worries me from their standpoint. But I got to believe that he was on board with this for them to go all in like that.
Sam, what do you think? I don't get the sense that if the Bogdanovich deal goes through, they get Holiday, that Giannis signs on the dotted line as soon as possible. I don't think this was a guarantee from Giannis that he's going to do this. Do you I mean, is this just what the Bucks had to do? Like when you're faced with the potential of seeing your franchise player walk away in the summer of 2021, you've got to roll the dice like this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Billy that I think you had to do it if you think it gets you Giannis. Now, we'll see if their internal confidence was founded or not, but they felt pretty confident. I mean, I don't know if I believe this, but that even if they stood pat, that Giannis wasn't going anywhere. Now, so at this point for me, I would be surprised if he doesn't sign the Supermax. I don't think it'll be right away. I think maybe a couple days in. But yeah, they're acting like it's what they had to do. And if you go back to their demise against Miami in the playoffs, the immediate chatter was about Chris Paul. And what I found interesting back then is that, and this is like every team with a superstar, of course you are coordinating with your superstar. Giannis, my understanding was not sending signals that, yeah, go get Chris Paul, because they immediately were cool on that idea. Mm-hmm. Drew Holiday and Bogdan both, I think, are 100% Giannis picks. And I know for a fact on the Bogdan front, Giannis has definitely been in touch with him, been part of this. And so this is them following the lead of their guy, and they do think it leads to them holding on to him. And like Billy said, in a small market, you know, we all know the story with Kareem, you know, pushing his way to the Lakers. And this city has seen this story before. They don't want to see Giannis wind up with the Lakers, wind up with the Knicks, wind up with the Heat, anybody else. So the price is worth it as long as the story has a happy ending.
Yeah. They didn't engage on Chris Paul, to your point, at all. You know, Chris Paul was just Phoenix and that was it. No, that surprised me. But seeing these deals happen, they clearly had a plan in what direction they want to go. By the way, not for nothing.
Hey, Chris,
go ahead, Billy.
No. But if you go, you look at the Clippers, in order to get Kawhi, what they gave up for Paul George, would you say is Paul George worth all those picks that they gave up? And it was to get Kawhi. So you almost say we got to give it all up to make sure we get Kawhi Leonard. That's the same thing as Drew Holiday. It's getting keeping your franchise player or getting another franchise player. And that, I mean, the price has been set. So now that's why I think a Chris Harden trade is going to be really difficult, because the market's been set. You know, Harden is much better than the other two. And look what they drew. I mean, look what Covington drew, two first. So that's going to make a hard deal for Houston to come up with somebody to try to get, you know, Harden from them.
Yeah. By the way, not for nothing, but like, in, you guys remember that Spider-Man meme on social media? Like in 2025, it's going to be like Sam Presti and David Griffin in the lottery room just pointing at each other with all those picks. Just saying,
have you seen? I saw the internet's a glorious place sometimes. Have you seen the picture of Presti, the meme where they put a cigar in his mouth and like a glass of whiskey, and he's just owning the room? You know. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of. I mean, who had a good line the other day? I think it was Will Guillory covers the Pelicans for us, and he had a line promoting his column about how chaos was a ladder and how the Pelicans exploited that. And you're seeing that all over the place. I mean, somebody is going to benefit from. I know we're getting far afield here, but to Billy's point, somebody's going to benefit from the Rockets' chaos and use that ladder and get something done. But I hear you.
Yeah, I mean. The other meme that was good was they sort of constructed Sam's face on Thanos. Did you see that? They put glasses on him and Sam's hair. It was he got the internet got Presti over the weekend. But interesting week for the Thunder with 16 firsts coming before 2026 plus those four swap rights. Billy, I want to talk about something you brought up there, and that is James Harden and what the Rockets do here. You know, put yourself in Raphael Stone's shoes for a second, as you've got two players that seemingly want to go in Russell and James Harden. What do you do? What are your steps over the next couple of weeks?
Well, first of all, I would meet with them each separately and explain, like, you know, I understand your desire to want to go other places, but it's not if we entertain anything, it's not going to happen overnight. And the best way for you to possibly help the situation is go out and play well like you're capable of playing. And, you know, if something comes about that makes sense, we will do it. But we're not just going to make a trade just to benefit you and hurt us. You know, we're willing to work with your representatives. But I need you to work with us as an organization and go out and play. Because if you're not playing, if you're a distraction, whatever, it's not going to help the situation. And my main conversation with James Harden is, look, you've been the face. You know, we've done things to help you. You wanted Chris Paul. You wanted Westbrook. We've brought in players. We've changed coaches. We've done a lot. So now I'm just asking you to work with us. And if the situation arises where we can come to something where it helps us and help you, we will do it. And because that's something you can't do. The thing about it, they're both in the contract. They're not going to decline their services and not play. And if they go out and don't play well, it's just not reflect bad on them. So I think you've got to continue to spend time talking to them and reassuring them, like, look, we understand where you want to go right now. We're not ready to make that move because nobody's made a deal that makes sense. But if something comes about that makes sense that can help us and help you, we will do it.
Billy, do
if
you...
I could jump in,
yeah,
Chris,
go ahead,
I know
Sam,
it's your pod. I'm curious how Billy sees this part. Like, in terms of what you would do, that makes a ton of sense. The one problem with, I think, the premise there is that Rafael Stone can't say that to those guys. He can't say, I did this and I did that. Like, the idea that Daryl Morey was the one who built that roster. Listen, it's just crazy to me. I'm not saying they didn't see this coming, but the night the Rockets got eliminated in the playoffs and I was in the bubble, you know, I wrote that Mike D'Antoni was still leaving a very small possibility to return. And I know that for a fact. And then the next day he got upset because his owner never called him to even talk about the season. And they were in their feelings because they had had a lot of bad blood. So Mike has kind of a very messy exit. Then you got Daryl going to Philly. That's the part where for James and Russ, I'm just not sure that they are legitimately listening to, you know, the folks who remain, because the capital, I'm not saying there's no capital. Those people have been around. Tad Brown, their CEO, and Rafael was you know, Daryl's right-hand guy. But that's the challenge for me, is that if you're James and Russ, you're going, man, you didn't do this and you didn't do that. The guys who did this are gone. And, you know, and now I want to be out of here too.
What do you think, Billy?
Well, I think you're right, but I think he's got to do the best job he can of trying to sell that. Sam, you're right. He wasn't there. He didn't spend the capital. He didn't help build it, but he was part of the building.
He was there, yeah. He just wasn't the guy.
And to me, this is where you start the relationship, especially with James Harden, if you're going to try to go forward. You've got to spend an enormous amount of time at practice, talking to him, listening to him, and being a sounding board. This is the time you can't be invisible, because if you are, a lot more things are going to come about. And also, I think you got to spend time talking to John Lucas, who's very good at talking to guys and helping them help you sell this. But then also, the main guy's got to come down and talk to him is the owner, because he's the one that ultimately has the final say. So, but I agree with you. It's like when we first came to Philadelphia, we didn't know Allen Iverson one bit, Larry Brown, myself, Kevin O'Connor. We didn't know him, but so, you know, we tried to get to know him. I remember we went to he was playing summer league at the Sunny Hill League, and, you know, we went to watch. We wanted to talk to him, packed house. So it was a game over. He leaves and doesn't take the time to even come talk to us. And so it took time of just spending time gradually talking to him, getting to know him to build that trust. And you know, within that first year, there were bumps in the road, but we were able to get it. And so that's – I think that's their only course, because – you know, the season's going to come about, and if they want to get traded, whatever, they've got to be out, go out, perform, and play at their best. And so, you've got to provide them with the best opportunity. And also, even if you know, I don't understand what their direction was, because trading Covington for those two first is sort of sending a different message that if you don't want to trade those guys, you're trading a piece for two picks. So they've got to decide what are they going to do. If they're going for the rebuild, then you go tell the guys, look, we will trade you, but it's going to take time. If you're not going for the rebuild, then you got to be honest with the guys. Look, we're going to try to get pieces around you. It may take a month, but we're going to do it. You just got to be honest. And because players, they want honesty. If you're saying, look, we're going to rebuild, we're going to trade you, great. If not, we're going to try to add pieces. I got these picks to do certain things. So honesty is going to be the best way going forward with them. Another great example, Brooke Lopez. Everybody knew that we were trying Dwight Howard. And I was honest with Brooke. I said, Brooke, we are talking to Orlando about Dwight Howard. But all the rumors you hear out there don't believe them. If there's something that's close or something's going to happen, you'll hear from me. I won't let you get blindsided, but there's going to be a lot of chatter out there. But if there's something that is legit, I will come to you and tell you. Otherwise, and that's it. That's the only guy I would trade you for. And he appreciated the fact that I was honest with him, at least.
Sam, I Billy brought up the Covington deal. I didn't really understand that at all. Like the end result of it, whether it's trading Covington and then using a first round pick to move off Ariza to what? To get the $5.7 million mid-level exception available to you? Like, what am I missing there? Like, that is there somebody better than Ariza that you're going to get for a $5.7 million exception?
I wish I had clarity. They have muddied the water so much, I think I need to take a step back and break down all these moves to see what the alleged intent was. I know, and I think our guy, John Hollinger, obviously former Memphis executive at The Athletic, Hollinger tweeted last night about the reported price that they were paying for the pick. And with the backdrop being that Tillman Fertitta has been widely known to be struggling through the pandemic on the economic front. And John, I think his strong opinion was that they were, the money was coming into play again. So I don't know. I've lost track of where they're trying to take it. It did seem like the mid-level was a priority to open that up again. And to Billy's earlier point, though, you know, if I'm confused, you better make sure that James and Russ are not confused, that they know what you're trying to do here. Because if all they do is listen to the media and the noise, then it's going to paint a very unflattering picture that's only going to want them out of there even more.
And Sam, we know that if James Harden goes on the block, there's a robust market for him. You know, he would fetch a significant package back in a deal. I don't know what Russell Westbrook gets you at this point. He's 32 years old. He's got 3 years, 130 plus million left on that contract. And the Rockets, from what I'm being told, seem to, you know, want something back for him. Like, they gave up multiple first round picks and Chris Paul to go and get him. They're not just looking to offload him onto somebody else's books. And if that's the mindset, I don't know what the options are. I mean, people keep pointing to the Knicks. I could be dead wrong on this, but I've been told by people within the Knicks that Russell Westbrook is not a priority for them at this point.
Right,
so I don't know where they turn. Like, I thought Charlotte for a minute, but LaMelo goes to Charlotte. I don't know if that changes things. The market for Russell Westbrook, Sam, to me is incredibly murky. And I don't know what the Rockets can hope to get back in return for said player.
I'm with you for sure. I'm going to attempt an analogy that probably won't land. I'm going to try anyway. here's a window into my week. So the water heater went out in our house this week, and I have been haggling with different companies because I'm kind of a cheap SOB every once in a while, and I'm trying to get a good quote. Well, what the people I'm haggling with don't know is that what's stuck in my craw is that 3 years ago I spent $900 to fix the current water heater, and that investment didn't pay off. Well, the new company doesn't care that I spent $900 3 years ago. You know, other teams don't care what the Rockets gave up to get Russell Westbrook. That doesn't matter anymore. And so if it is true, as has been reported, that they appear to have something real on the table from the Wizards, but are still pushing for more in a John Wall trade, again, I'm going to qualify it by saying if, but, you know, that has been reported, that has been talked about at our place. They should do that deal. You know, and I know John's injury problems have been well chronicled, but other than that, I don't know where else the market goes. The Charlotte thing did seem like, you know, if Michael Jordan didn't get LaMelo Ball, then Westbrook might have been the next move. Well, lo and behold, he goes there. So to my knowledge, Washington is real. I don't know anything else, and the Rockets should not be too greedy.
What do you... let me just stick on you for a second, Sam. Like, what does John Wall do for you? Like, if you're, it's like the same contract that he has, that Russ has, and he is probably even more of a distressed asset because we don't know what John Wall is going to be after having not played for like almost 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's the human factor to me is really all there is to it. It's if I don't know John's state of mind, but let's say John was maybe a little hurt that the Wizards moved him, but okay, H-Town, let's do this, let's have fun. If he's into it, then you can turn a page with your fan base instead of having your fan base know that Russell Westbrook is playing against his wishes to wear that red, you know, that red Rockets jersey. That's a franchise and a culture and an organization that they're very prideful, a lot of great history. And I think in general that they don't want their fans to be kind of, you know, soured on the stars they have as part of their program. So that would be it. You're right. I mean, the question marks around John are significant. I'm also a little confused from the Washington side because, you know, I thought that they couldn't wait to get John and Brad back together again. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe all the stuff that we've written about and talked about in the past about their dynamic has not gone away between those two players. I don't know. But, you know, I think for the Rockets, that would be it, that you get out of the uncomfortable situation with Russ.
Billy, I won't ask you to come up with as exceptional an analogy as Sam did with his water heater story, but
that was good though.
If you're a GM of a team and Russell Westbrook's on the market, I mean, I guess it depends on the circumstances, certainly, but how are you viewing him at 32 and coming off the season that he had?
Well, I mean, he is a declining asset as a player. And so now if you're other team, like, it's okay. What is he bringing to the table that's going to help us? And to me, if you're a young team, he's not bringing anything to the table to help you. You can score points and be out there. If you're a veteran team, is he going to adjust the way he plays to fit in? And I don't know. I don't know if he's capable of doing that because he's at his best when he's playing all out and, you know, trying to score, making passes when he can't score, getting triple doubles. So that where it becomes difficult. And if I was Houston and I have him, you're looking for somebody else with a bad contract or two bad contracts that you can swap because that's what you have. And John Wall is just changing scenery. I don't get it from Washington, like Sam said. Houston is just changing scenery, personality, and maybe that person can mesh with James a little bit. But there's not enough bad contracts out there to put it together. I mean, if you went to Oklahoma City and say Sam, but they don't have picks to give Sam to get Horford's contract. So that's the difficult situation. And that's where a lot of teams now that gave these guys when they were 28, these big contracts are now going to run into as they get to the end of these contracts is how do you move a $45 million contract, you know, a guy making $130 million over the next 3 years. That's the difficult part that teams are going to face here. And I think that's where Houston is with Westbrook. Harden has asset value and he's a talent. He's always going to be an MVP candidate. Westbrook isn't. And so now you put them on the floor together, you got a guy making over $40 million that's not even close to being a $40 million player. And so if we see it as observers, James sees it as a player. And he's wondering, how do we get better? How do I compete against the Lakers, Denver, Utah, you know, some of these teams in the West? And so I think they're hoping that the league would come out with that amnesty again, and you can try to amnesty a contract. I mean, that's really their only saving grace, because even if you go for a buyout, what's a buyout? I mean, hey, here's $100 million of $130 million. You know, that's still going to be on your cap. So they're in a difficult, difficult situation. You sit them. He's going to not be happy. You don't play his normal minutes. So I've been looking and looking, and I thought Horford's contract maybe, or you say, hey, anybody wants James Harden, you got to take Westbrook with you. And I know it's a big number, but you know, that's the price. Maybe I take one less pick, but you got to take Westbrook with him.
Oh, nobody loves a good amnesty like you, Billy. Nobody loves.
I love those amnesties when they come about. You know, get the erase
Billy,
of mistake.
You know, to add on to that, I like that breakdown a lot. Here's the other part that would add a lot of angst to the Russ situation if you're thinking about possibly bringing him aboard. Like, my understanding is that Russ is ready to get back to playing Russ basketball, which is like non-Kevin Durant OKC days, like the MVP year, you know? Mm. And that's the part where, I mean, I don't know who's signing up for that. I don't think anybody is. Maybe Charlotte. But now they got LaMelo. So it's not just the money. It's not just who he is as a player. I think the days of him saying, let me fit in with somebody like James Harden are over. He wants to go kind of rock the way Russ does again. And I don't think that's too appealing.
Yeah, that's it. You can't find a team that's in that mode and say, okay, we need that type of player.
Right.
That's the problem. If you go through and you look in the East, look in the West, there are not a lot of franchises. Okay, because he's not. It's as if we remember trading Allen to Denver. They paired him up with Carmelo, thinking okay. And after a couple years, okay, let's send him to Detroit. And then he couldn't mesh there because he wanted to play. I think he said, "I'm MVP. I don't come off the bench." And then you look, you know, his next stop. Then his career sort of fizzled. I don't see a franchise now that's going to say, especially because the money is so big. That's the thing. It just right. It eats up so much of your cap when you take on a guy like that. And, you know, the max salary is for guys that are the Hardens, the Giannis, the LeBrons, guys that are your franchise guys that every night you can count on. And I don't know if Russell's in that position anymore.
I think Travis Outlaw is still getting paid by the Nets, if I'm not mistaken.
but I didn't sign him.
You've often said that. You did not.
Manix, you know, you sent me a Manix Billy. He sent me a list of topics for this pod. I don't remember roasting Billy King being one of the topics.
But that's just part of it, Sam. Anytime if you heard me on this pod, it's always part of it. You know, I'm waiting for the dig of Duke players. How many went in the second round, not the first round, not the lottery? Oh,
tough lottery night. Tough lottery night for the big schools there, Duke and Kentucky among them. Let me finish, guys, with the free agency in general, and you know, not the most star-studded class, I guess. High profile. It's gonna have to wait till the summer of 2021. But Sam, as you look at the guys that are going to hit the market, whether it's Fred VanVleet or Montrezl Harrell or any of the other guys that are going to be out there in the next couple of days, what's the most interesting, you know, player to watch for you at this point?
I thought VanVleet might be the guy, but you know, in this day and age when we all know that a bunch of deals get done in advance, I'd be very surprised if he's not re-signing in Toronto. And
hey, Sam, the former GM, I take offense to that. We never did deals beforehand. We waited till the clock struck, and then we negotiated. We did them quickly. We negotiated very quickly. And
it's amazing. If you guys could be that efficient in your normal lives, like the work that you get done in 60 seconds is just incredible. It all gets tweeted out at 12:01. I don't know how it works. I thought Fred's market would be interesting because the guy is a great story. I mean, undrafted and gritty player. But the thing with the Raptors that I think is going to probably bear out here, just like it did a few years back, is that Masai Ujiri definitely takes care of his guys who are not only really good ball players, but who are very important to their environment and their culture. And to me, VanVleet is now going to get the Kyle Lowry treatment. If you know, you guys remember, Kyle got $100 million in his deal when he wasn't getting offered that elsewhere. And, you know, and the Raptors kind of, you know, they didn't make him go find his market. They just paid the guy, and it obviously paid off. So Fred, you know, I think that's where that goes. We all, you know, AD certainly back with the Lakers. It's an extremely underwhelming free agency period. And Manix, I'm not giving you a good answer. I don't know who the compelling person is, because not much of it is moving the needle for me.
Billy, what you look at VanVleet specifically, and I if he doesn't get done right away, and if he hits unrestricted free agency, there will be a market for him. 26 years old, surprisingly established himself as a really good defender. I didn't see that coming when VanVleet got to the NBA. But you know what. What kind of offers you think he would expect to get in free agency?
Well, I mean, I think he's looking around 20 a year. I mean, I think he's looking at himself, I'm a starter, and where the marketplace, and probably a little north of that. But I do think that what Sam said, and knowing Masai, this has been a process that has been worked on, not just, you know, while they're in the bubble and like that. I think the deal has been, you know, I won't say agreed to, but I think that both parties know what it's going to take to get it done, and it'll come pretty quickly. But I think he's north of 20 million, just because I think Masai will probably say we want to make sure that we have put ourselves in a position to keep adding, and you know, and once this deal, I'll keep taking care of you, my guy, and he's a guy that, so that's why I think he's looking at in a market, because I don't know if anybody else would pay him, you know, more.
Mm. Before I let you guys go, as we record this, the breaking news is Klay Thompson season-ending Achilles tear in his left leg. Sam, you're out there in Northern California. Just give me your reaction and kind of your instant reaction to what this not only means for Clay, but, you know, the Warriors, they've got that $17 million trade exception they've got to use in the next couple of days. Putting you on the spot, but how do you think this kind of shakes out?
I just feel terrible for him. I've talked to other people about this since yesterday when the fear was that it was the Achilles. And not to get too corny on you guys, but it's like my thing is this. The old cliche that is so true about, you know, money doesn't buy happiness. Like, Klay Thompson is filthy rich. He's got money just pouring into his bank account. But this dude is as much of a hooper as I've ever come across. He is a basketball player through and through. And watching him compete and fight against the Raptors in the finals 2 years ago was one of the most amazing things I've ever watched on a basketball court. I just love the guy's game. And because, you know, I mean, this news is devastating. I feel terrible for the guy. You're going to go 2 years in the absolute prime of your career. He had gone from being a guy who was drafted as a shooter who could defend a little bit to a guy who was an all-NBA level defender and a guy who then got to the rim a little bit, you know, covered for Steph Curry on the defensive side, was a major part of their dynasty. And I think his best basketball was still ahead of him. And that part of it's devastating. I mean, and then big picture for the Warriors, I just don't know what you do because there's a ripple effect on Steph Curry. Now you are impacting his prime because Steph, you know, is kind of in lockstep with Clay. I don't know what they do. I don't know where they go. It's really unfortunate. The Warriors being back to being the Warriors was going to be one of the best stories of this coming season. And obviously this changes that.
Billy, if you're Bob Myers in this situation, how do you handle it? Again, they do have that trade exception that they've got to do something with very quickly. Does this change your calculus? Does it shake up the way you would, you know, look at this team?
Well, I think because of the fact you have Steph in his prime, you can't waste another year or put it off another year to wait for Clay to come back. You've got to put pieces around Steph and Draymond to try to at least get in the playoffs and be competitive. They got the brand new building out there that, you know, even though you don't know if fans are going to come or not, but I think it's imperative that they try to add pieces and add players. Financially, look at it from the business side, insurance will continue to pay because, you know, it started after he missed 41 games with the last injury. And since he won't be back on the court, I think it'll continue. And, you know, they'll get insurance payments. So it is just devastating. So I think from Bob's standpoint of view, you've got to now explore, is it bringing in two pieces into the trade exception? Is it getting one piece into the trade exception? You're not going to replace Clay, but you got to get pieces that can go out there and compete with Steph and those guys so you can be competitive. And the thing about it is the trade exception is going to expire, but, you know, so you want to add somebody if you can, but you don't want to make a mistake and add a contract that's going to hurt you down the road just to try to win this year. So if you can't find the right piece, maybe you bring in a guy making half of that amount of money that can help you. And then you got to look at when can you add other pieces during the year to become better. And maybe you take a contract for somebody and get some picks that you can use later to add during the season. So you get some assets to try to build that team. But it is just devastating because they didn't plan on this. The season was starting within, you know, like 8 days. And so their mindset wasn't, you know, we don't have Clay. Now you're sitting there going, we don't have Clay. It's like when, you know, Brooke Lopez, you know, we had the Garnetts and the Pierce, everybody, and he breaks his foot at the beginning of the season. It's like, oh my God, that's the one piece we needed to have because, and when he went down, we changed how we completely played. Moved KG to the five and played small and shot more threes. But you don't plan to start the season. You plan on having all you guys. You expect there's injuries, but you don't plan on, like, a week before season start losing one of your key pieces. And so it's one you've got to get over the pain of him being hurt, and you got to do your job now and figure out what's available. How can we help Steph?
Yeah, just brutal for Klay Thompson, and you know, hopefully he can bounce back. Still young enough to continue his career once this is done, but tough. And tough for the Warriors, as you said. I mean, they were, to Sam's point, one of the more anticipated stories going into this year? Can they have kind of the second ride of the Golden State Warriors? Sam, Billy, enjoyed the conversation. You can check out Sam's stuff over at The Athletic. Does a terrific job covering the NBA for them. Billy, if you wake up in the early hours of the morning in Philadelphia, you can hear on Philadelphia radio periodically. Had to get one last dig in there at you, Billy.
You can get it on radio.com. So if you're traveling, you can go to radio.com and listen that way as well.
Hey, Billy, I can't let it all be a one-way, pick on Billy show. I got to ask Mannix, our time in the bubble, I learned that you didn't change clothes very often. I need to know what happened with the pants that were worn for 65 consecutive days. Are they in a frame? Like, what are they in? Going to Naismith, what's going to happen there?
Oh, no. They got one good wash and were put right back on again. Like, they weren't just bubble pants. They are year-round pants.
I thought I saw them. Somebody said they saw them at Space Mountain, ride by itself.
Well, that was Woj's thing. Adrian Wojnarowski's thing was that they were just going to walk away on their own because they've been, worn so often that the legs would just power walk off the campus. But no, they're I got warmed to bed last night, actually, now that I think of it.
All right. So fair enough. Man, I knew you when you were young and you were trying to be, smooth and styling. It's good to see this new version of you.
The bubble, Sam. The bubble wasn't about – and I saw you as I was leaving, and the difference between you and the beginning of the bubble and the end was stark.
You took the bar down and I went
I did. I devolved. Like, Malika Andrews was at the top because she got dressed to the nines every day. And the rest of us were just slovenly to borrow a word there.
Fair. You were an inspiration of the worst kind, so I thank you for that.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining me here on the show.
Take care.
All right, guys. Be good.
Coming up next, former Spurs guard Tony Parker. All right, Tony Parker played 18 seasons in the NBA, 17 with the San Antonio Spurs. He won 4 championships, has his jersey retired in San Antonio, soon will be in the Basketball Hall of Fame. He's also an author. His new book is aptly titled Beyond All My Dreams. It's available this week on Amazon and in bookstores. And Tony Parker joins me on the show. Tony, you're far too young to be retired, my friend. How is retired life going?
That's why we have to say I'm retired from basketball, not from life, like the real life. But it's been great. I'm enjoying my time, enjoying time with my friends and family. And even in those tough times, obviously, because of confinement, it's nice to spend more quality time with them.
How big a shock was it for you to not have basketball every day? I mean, you were a professional in France as a teenager. I mean, you were living this probably as long as you can remember.
It's a big difference, but I prepare myself for that because very early in my career, I invested in different businesses. I own a basketball team in France, men's team. I own a women's team. I have my academy. I bought a ski resort too, so I'm doing a lot of different stuff that is keeping me very, very busy, and it's been very fun to be on the other side. When you're in ownership, it's very different than when you're a player, and it's been a great experience for me.
How did you know, Tony, to be that prepared for life after the game? Because all those things, I mean, that certainly, I'm sure, keeps you busy.
I think early in my career, I had a great meeting with Magic Johnson, who explained to me that it's very important to work on your network and knowing people who have an unbelievable opportunity as NBA players to meet anybody we want. And so I took advantage of that and was on the phone and meeting people. He always told me that people will answer to you way faster when you're playing than when you're retired. So I took that to heart. and I work on my relationship. And so that's why for me it was an easy transition when I stopped and it was not the same for me anymore because, we had so many great years with the Spurs and with Pop and Timmy and Manu that, it was just different for me. And so it was an easy transition to my business life because I prepared since 2009 when I first invested in the team.
The book is called Beyond All My Dreams. That suggests that everything that's happened to you has been beyond anything you would have expected. Is that fair to say?
Exactly. And you have to put it in perspective. Back in the day when I first arrived in the NBA, it was no European point guard. I'm the first European point guard to make it in NBA. It was only maybe two or three Europeans. You know, it was not like now. It's easy to get drafted, and you have a ton of international players. It was very different back then. And when I arrived, and then Dirk and Powell, we took it, you know, to the next level as a European guys. You know, making it to an NBA team and being franchise guys, it was very different. And so that's why I never thought I would have a career like that. When I first arrived, I thought I'd be like, if I can be a good role player, a good backup, you know, I'll be happy. You know, that's how I entered the league, you know. I thought if I can play a good 10, 15 minutes, you know, if Coach Pop let me play just a little bit, I'll be a happy man.
You're right. Nowadays, we almost expect every draft to have a Luka, or every draft to have a Porzingis.
Yeah, that's what
they
expect now for Europeans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you were, I mean, describe your kind of situation back in the early 2000s. I mean, you declare for the NBA draft, but how sure are you that you're going to be able to make it in the NBA?
No, I had no idea. I had no idea I'd be drafted, you know, because at the time, you know, it was hard for Europeans to be drafted in the first round. You know, it was like a big, big deal, you know, when you get drafted in the first round. Now you're like, oh, you have 10 Europeans drafted, 5 Europeans drafted, top 5. It's not like a big deal. Like you say, Luka Doncic or Giannis, you know, now they expect to draft a European and be a franchise guy. So I'm very proud and very happy to be part of the European guys who made NBA GMs and owners that believe that you can gamble on the European and be a franchise guy. And so it started very early with Drazen Petrovic, I'll say, back in the 90s, and all the way to Dirk and Powell and myself and Kirilenko, Vlade Divac, Stojakovic, all those guys, you know, we played a part of having now guys like Giannis and Luka, the franchise guys.
When a 19-year-old kid from France hears he's going to San Antonio, Texas, what's your first reaction?
Very scary. I was like, wow, where am I going? I'm going to Texas. And I've never been to Texas. My dad was from Chicago. So growing up, I've been to Chicago like two or three times, but that's the only thing I knew about the U.S. I didn't know nothing about San Antonio except that they had Tim Duncan and Coach Pop and David Robinson, but that's it. And so I was very, very happy, surprised, because it's been a blessing for me to be here. And now I live here, my house is here, and I don't see myself anywhere else now. You know, I love Texas.
I was watching back your jersey retirement, Tony, and Pop said during that ceremony, kind of tongue-in-cheek, I guess, that he wanted to apologize for all the physical and mental abuse that he gave you early on. He was kidding, we think, right? How serious was that?
Kidding. He was not kidding. It was a little bit of an abuse, but at the same time, I knew that he wanted to win, and it came from a good place. And so for me as a player, as long as the coach, even if he goes over the line, it comes from a good place and he's competitive and he wants to win. I was the same way. I was very competitive. I wanted to win. I had the same competitive fire, you know, just like Timmy and Manu. And so it never really bothered me, even if sometimes it was really hard to take, obviously. I was like, that's how I grew up. You know, in Europe, you grow up with crazy coaches, crazy Serbian coaches screaming like that. I grew up with that. So it was just, for me, it was like just another one, you know.
What was the meanest thing he said to you early on?
I don't want to curse on your show, but it was a lot of cursing, a lot of cursing.
But you learned from it?
Yeah, you learn from it. And you know, you have guys that built for that, and you have guys that are not built for that. And you know, with the Spurs, with Coach Pop, if you couldn't take it, they just get rid of you. You know what I mean? And so they had the luxury to do that because we were so good. And so for me, I took it, and it helped me, and I took it the right way and built on that.
It all worked out for you, obviously, Tony. But what do you think would have happened if you were drafted to a team that didn't have the kind of stability that San Antonio had at that time?
Well, I think I'll still be a good player and all-star and all that kind of stuff. But you know, Coach Pop, where I think he helps me the most is like longevity, you know, to stay hungry and keep wanting it every year and come back strong every year and keep pushing. You know, Pop will never let you take a day off.
What were those practices like early in San Antonio? Because Avery Johnson was still there at the time. You've got David Robinson last couple of years of his career. I mean, you were literally entering a situation where they're saying, all right, you got to help us win a championship. We're championship driven right now.
Yeah, but it's funny because at the time it was a little bit scary because I was the only young guy. I had no young guys on the team. They were all 50 years old, 60 years old. You know, it was a veteran team. They were like ready to win another championship. So, but the good thing is like the guys, they really welcomed me. Like David Robinson, Terry Porter, Malik Rose, all those guys, they were really nice to me and took me under their wings. And then they helped me improve every year. And Pop helped too, because after five games, he put me a starter. So right away, I had to like tell David where to go, but very nicely, David, can you please go over there? It's over there at the plate. And I was like not saying I was being trying to be very nice to everybody. But at the same time, Pop gave me a lot of responsibility right away and gave me confidence, you know, to play my game and just be myself.
R.C. Buford likes to joke that Sam Presti discovered Tony Parker. That was the guy. I mean, do you remember Sam's interest in you back in the day?
Yep. Yeah. Sam was the first one that saw me, you know, in Paris, and he will give the tapes, you know, to RC, and then they'll give it to Pop, and Pop will not care because he was like, "Nah, French point guard, no way." And they had to force Pop to watch my tapes, you know, and I had to do one workout. Didn't do very well the first workout. I had to come a second time, and so it's funny how it works in life. But I guess it was meant to be that I become, you know, the Spurs point guard.
French point guard, Argentinian two guard, a center from the Virgin Islands. I mean, that team became, you know, the global team for mm-hmm. decades, it seems like.
Yeah, for decades. It's funny the gamble that RC and Pop took in international players, especially at the time, because now if you see it, you'd be like, oh, but of course. But no, it was not that easy. They really had to take a big gamble and have the trust of the owner, Peter Holt, who was great, to like, gamble international players, and they were the first one, you know, to send all the scouts and if you look at our team in 2014, half of the team is international. Like all of our years, we have so many international guys in our team.
Mm-hmm. What do you take more pride in, Tony, the championships you won in San Antonio or the impact you had on the French national team and how it rose over the years?
That's a great question. Both. Mm-hmm. It's hard to choose. Like obviously the championships are great, but I take same satisfaction of becoming and still a great ambassador, you know, for French basketball and try to have the respect around the world for French basketball. And the last couple of years, we had, 10, 12 guys with the number one country most represented, you know, in the NBA. So we came a long, long way French basketball. So it's nice now to see them, you know, succeed and see all the new guys succeed. We're going to have maybe another two French guys in the draft. Mm-hmm. We got two. Hopefully, I'll be top 20. And one of them, I know him since he's 12 years old, doing my basketball camps and won a championship with my French team in 2019. So it's amazing, you know, come full circle like that, you know.
How many do French players look up to you in your lifestyle or Boris Diaw in his lifestyle?
I think both, you know, because me and Boris, we are two different personalities, but at the same time, you know, we're very close. And I think you can take some stuff from me and some stuff from Boris, you know. I think both of us, you know, we took a lot of pride to be great ambassadors for French basketball.
Chemistry is incredibly important for every team, but how quickly did the chemistry develop between you and Tim? I mean, Tim's, I would say a quieter guy, certainly, than you are. How did that chemistry come about?
I think it took a full year, you know, for us to feel each other out and having the trust, because you imagine you're Tim Duncan, you're all-star MVP of the finals, and you have a French point guard, and you're like, man, I'm sure he was thinking no European point guard is made in the NBA. So why him, that little skinny guy from Paris? And so it took a while, but after our first playoff series, you know, we played Seattle Supersonics at the time, and it was Gary Payton who was one of the best point guards in the league, and I played very well in that series, and I can see Timmy, you know, trusting me more and more. And then we played the Lakers, and I had another great series against the eventual champion. And so I think after that first year, he saw something in me that he knew that he can count on me, and I will show up every night.
The favorite of your four championships, which one would you say?
It's hard because each of them got a special meaning. But if I had to choose one, I'll say 2014 because it's hard to win in this league. It's very, very hard to win in the NBA. And so 2003, when I won, I was 21. I didn't really realize you're young. You think, oh, it's going to be easy, you know. 2007 was kind of special for me because I was becoming the first European to be MVP of the finals. So that was pretty cool. But 2014... especially the way we lost 2013, that we were up 3-2 and we should have won that one, to come back in 2014 and winning the way we did it and the way we played, because we played unbelievable in 2014, I'll say, yeah, it was my favorite.
You guys run a mission that year.
Yeah, that year we run a mission. And we play maybe the best basketball of my whole 17 season in the Spurs. 2014, we played at a very, very high level. The way we were moving the ball, the way we played together. And that year, I made the All-Star team, All-NBA second team, like I was in my prime, you know?
I mean, that to lose the way you did in the year before and to come back with that kind of mindset, that takes mental toughness. That's just the definition of mental toughness.
Yeah, it shows the character of the team. And everybody was writing us off. They would say we were too old and we missed our last opportunity, you know, to win a championship in 13. And so that's why 14, we took it to heart. And that summer I was on a mission. We won the gold medal with the French national team for the first time in their history. And then I just kept it going.
There were so many things about your career with San Antonio, Tony, that like you don't see in today's game as often as maybe you should. The selflessness of that team, like the willingness to, you know, as guys got a little bit older, starting with David to Timmy, then Timmy to you, then you to Kawhi. I mean, you were able to put together one of the great dynasties in sports history, I think in large part because you guys didn't have huge egos and you were willing, you understood the situation.
Yeah, you said everything. That was the number one thing when people ask me how did the Spurs had the best run in the history for 20 years, winning in playoffs and streaks, all that is no egos. And it started with David Robinson, you know, sharing then with Timmy, then Timmy to Manu, Manu to me, and then to Kawhi. It was just, we understand, you know, who was in his prime, who, you know, was ready to take over the offense or whatever. It's like selfless and no egos.
I've always wondered what a Kawhi Leonard, Tim Duncan conversation looks like. I mean, is it like three words?
Very interesting, very short.
Couple other things for you. You own these teams overseas. You've said in the past your dream is to own an NBA team. Is that still, you know, a priority for you?
Yeah, it's one of my like big dream. You know, I was always a big dreamer, and that's, I think, that's why I made this career, is because I was a big dreamer. And so now with all the relationships I'm creating, I hope one day I can, you know, create a group in France that we can, you know, maybe one day, I don't know, 10, 15 years, you know, one day try to make that dream. I think it's very important to have dreams, and it's definitely the biggest one.
Has the Holt family ever offered you a little piece of the action down there?
Who?
The Holt family in San Antonio?
The Holt family. No, right now we're having no discussions because right now, you know, I'm very involved in France and I just entered the board of the soccer team, OL, in France, and that's a big deal, you know, in France. So right now I'm more focused on, you know, creating all those relationships and then we'll see. I love the U.S. and definitely going to still spend time here, but I have to prepare myself now for if one day I want to try to accomplish that dream.
you had always said, Tony, for many years that you wanted to play 20 years. You retired after 18. How did you know that was time?
Just the fact that I was just like, I don't know, it's a feeling in your body and your mind. You just knew it was time. You know, I could have easily, you know, played 20 years. I had one more year in my contract. So I could have done 19 for sure. but I just knew. I just knew it was time. And I loved everything that I'm doing now. I just love it. And so it was just not the same for me anymore. And so I just didn't want to play basketball to play basketball. You know, I always played basketball to win championships. And so if I didn't play for a championship, I don't know, it felt wrong, you know.
You think it was Charlotte, though? I mean, you know what you were getting into.
Nothing to do with Charlotte because Charlotte had a great time. I made great people. Michael made it great for me. The coaching staff, my teammates, they were great. And I had a great time in Charlotte. So that's why I don't want to get it wrong. I had a great time. I made some great people. It's just that I wanted to spend more time with my kids. And it was just a life decision, I guess, you know?
I guess the question is more like...
But it has nothing to do that I didn't have a good time in Charlotte.
I guess the question more is if they were on a championship level, would you may have been motivated more to stick around if they had been competing?
Maybe it would have helped. That's for sure.
Last thing I have for you. Tim Duncan just left the Spurs after 1 year as an assistant coach. Are you more surprised that Tim Duncan was an assistant coach for a year or that he left after 1 year?
I was surprised that he was an assistant for a year. I was very surprised. I don't know what Pop told him to get him on board to do that. But I guess he was happy, you know, to have an experience. He always said that it was going to be a short thing anyway from the get-go. And so so then it was 1 year. But Timmy, he likes so many stuff, you know, I guess he was just curious to do 1 year.
If he didn't have to do media, do you think he would have stuck around and become a head coach?
It would be a better chance that he stick around.
He did coach one game and then said, "No, I'm not doing media afterwards. You can have somebody else take care of that." So
I know that was funny. I saw that. Yeah, that was very funny.
The way it is. Tony, congratulations, first of all, on all your career success as everybody watched you for decades in the NBA. The book, Beyond All My Dreams, again, available this week on Amazon and in bookstores. Tony, great to catch up with you, man. Happy for all your success, and good luck with everything.
Take care. Bye.